take a look at the packaging of practically any packaged food, and you're likely to find the words natural flavors and artificial flavors on them. These terms seem ambiguous, but they explain why so many of the foods Americans eat taste the way that they do. For today's Please Explain, we're looking into those flavorings, what they are, how they're made, and why they use it, everything from cough syrups to candies to French fries to frozen yogurt. And joining us are Dr. Gary Rynexis, a professor and head of the Flavor Research and Education Center in the Department of Food Science and Nutrition at the University of Minnesota, and Barb Stuckey, author of Taste, Surprising Stories in Science About Why Food Tastes Good. It's available now in paperback from Atria, and she's a professional food developer at Mattson. Thank you both for being on our show.
Pleased to be here.
Yes, thanks for having us.
And we are inviting our audience, our listeners, to join the conversation. If you have a question, you can call us at 212-433-9692. You can write us on our show page at WNYC.org, and you can also get in touch with us through Facebook and Twitter. Our Twitter handle is at Leonard Lopate. Barb, let's begin with you. When we see natural flavors or artificial flavors listed on an ingredient list, should we assume that they're all man-made compounds?
No, and this may be a better question for Gary, but I think that you can assume that some of what is listed as a flavor on a package label will be naturally derived, and some of the things there may be otherwise derived.
Through chemistry.
Through chemistry. I think it helps, though, to understand exactly what a flavor is, and that is really it's mysterious to consumers, although at the same time this word flavor is very, very familiar to them. As consumers, we generally use the word flavor to describe the way that something tastes or the way that we experience it through our senses. That word is used very technically in the food industry to mean an ingredient that is added to foods that generally, in most cases, adds aroma. And the thing that will really make it come to life for your listeners is if they think about what they've got in their cabinet at home and what they use for baking in vanilla extract. So vanilla extract is a flavor. It's something that has been extracted from a vanilla bean that we use to add the aroma of vanilla to something like a batch of chocolate chip cookies. So a flavor, when you see it on the label of a food, is somewhat akin to that vanilla extract that you use at home. Sometimes they're extracts. Sometimes they're a little bit more complicated than extracts. But really, getting down to brass tacks, a flavor, when you see it on an ingredient panel, is something that is there to add and enhance and complexify the aroma of a food.
Is that why many flavor companies also make fragrances?
That's exactly right, yes. The fragrances that go into health and beauty products like lotions and shampoos, there are fragrances that are added to those to enhance the aromas of those products. And that's exactly the same role that flavors play in the packaged food industry. They are there to add what we call top notes or aromas to make the food more appealing.
But, Gary, to me, when you say flavor, it says strawberry flavor or something like that, I'm not looking for the smell of strawberries. I'm looking for the taste of strawberries.
Well, that's very true. But I think Barb is exactly right about the consumer perception of this whole thing. But you do need taste, and there's no question about it. You do need the tartness that comes from the acids in the strawberries. You need some sugar to go along with that. But when we talk about what's provided, the industry, the flavor industry, tends to give you the aroma portion, and then the company that's going to use it tends to put in the taste portion. But they certainly do go together.
When were they first created and used?
Oh, gosh. Now, you know, I would go back to someplace 1800s is when they first started using flavors, identified vanilla, for example, and what was the key component of vanilla. And I liked the comment you made about vanilla as being a nice example because it can be an extract of a vanilla bean, or it can be, in fact, just a kind of an alcoholic solution of the key components of vanilla bean.
And that's why some vanillas say artificial flavoring and others say natural vanilla.
Exactly. If a chemist synthesizes vanillin, you know, what the vanilla bean produces naturally, but the chemist produces it and puts it in there, it's an artificial. If the plant produces it and puts it in there, it's natural.
Well, you've written that artificial flavorings are simpler in composition and potentially safer than natural flavors. How does that work?
Well, that's absolutely correct. We can take any natural product or almost any natural product, and it can be used, and people are comfortable and happy with it. When nature produces a lot of things that aren't necessarily safe or healthy, and if you make an artificial flavor of a product that nature's made, that artificial flavor can contain none of the carcinogens, mutagens, toxic substances that nature's provided for you.
Are artificial flavors cheaper to create?
Oh, yes, absolutely. You look at the ingredients that go into an artificial flavor. They're typically one-tenth the cost of what a natural component would be. And if you say, I want it to also be kosher, or I want it to be from, the product I'm creating, it can be 100 or 1,000 times more expensive.
Let's talk a bit about coconut flavoring. Where do the natural and artificial versions come from? Is it, again, a matter of we can duplicate the flavor of coconut simply by through chemistry?
Well, yes. That's rather interesting. Almost every flavor has one or two chemicals. Just those pure chemicals alone will elicit the response. And so if you take a mesoy lactone, that's a special lactone produced by nature in the bark of a tree. And if you would smell that pure chemical, you'd say, that's coconut. No, we put other things in there. Nature puts other things in there to make it a nice coconut. So the idea is, if you want a natural, you can get the bark of that tree and extract it and concentrate it and get it into the marketplace as a natural coconut.
Now, Barbara, are there flavors that can't be created artificially in a lab?
I would assume that pretty much anything could be artificially created in a lab. But I want to say that we work for some of the largest food companies in the world, helping them develop new products, as well as working for entrepreneurs who are building food businesses and want to get to market. And so we develop these things that we call product development briefs. So if you come to us and you want to create a company, let's call it Leonard's Natural Soda Company, we're going to sit down and we're going to jointly draft something that will be the development brief for your line of beverages. And I can honestly tell you that in the development briefs that I've jointly crafted with my clients over the years, not one of them, not one client, and not once have we said that in this development brief, we want to create something that contains artificial flavors. That has never been a goal of anyone who gets into the food business or is in the food business and wants to create something.
So they start off wanting to do something natural.
Yes. The going to an artificial flavor is usually, it comes out of necessity. And for some reason, we can't either, A, get that natural strawberry flavor or coconut flavor from the ingredients we're using. Maybe we're using juices, natural juices in the product. Maybe we're using concentrates. We can't get the flavor that we want from that. Or B, if we happen to resort to natural flavor, or we have to resort to using a flavor at all, we just can't get the right thing from the natural versions, then and only then would we resort to using an artificial flavor. And sometimes that's driven by the process, maybe a beverage process. A natural flavor or a juice might be fine. When you're talking about developing a candy or a confection, sometimes the sheer temperatures that the candy will see in the process are just too harsh for a fruit juice or for a natural flavor. And those are the times when, and the only times when, the industry really reaches for an artificial flavor. So I just want to clarify that it's really those things are, usually we don't start out there. We end up there by necessity.
I'm talking with Barb Stuckey, who's a professional food developer at Mattson, and Dr. Gary Rynexis, who is a professor and head of the Flavor Research and Education Center in the Department of Food Science and Nutrition at the University of Minnesota. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Gary, what kind of chemicals are used to make artificial flavors?
Well, you know, you have to use the same chemicals that nature used. That's one of the unique things about being in the flavor industry. If you want to create a strawberry, a cherry, a roast beef, whatever, you must use the same chemicals that nature did, because they have their own character, their own flavor. So you have to use the same compounds.
So if you want to get a fried chicken taste, you take fried chicken, you do a chemical analysis of it, and then you take chemicals that do not come out of chicken, and you duplicate it?
Right. You try to find other sources of them, because it would be rather difficult to fry up all the chicken, take the flavor salt, and throw the chicken away. You know, so you have to find other sources of the chemicals for economics and just, common sense.
But well, Barb, exactly in your book, right. You use peach nectar as an example. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, there are a number of flavors that we love, a number of foods and fruits that we love that have very ethereal flavors, very delicate flavors, we may describe them as. And as a result of just the method of going to market may, in fact, flash off or numb or knock down the ethereal, delicate flavors. So peach, for example, if you think about what makes a fresh in-season peach so craveable, it's that floral, fuzzy kind of top note that is just so, so delicate. If you were to take that peach and juice it at the height of season and make a peach nectar and you consumed it fresh, it's going to taste just wonderful. But if you wanted to sell it across the country, if you were a juice company like an Odwalla or like a Naked Juice, for example, you would want to pasteurize that peach nectar because you want to make sure that the product's safe and that it meets a shelf life that allows you to get it onto a shelf via a refrigerated truck. And so in that process of pasteurizing a fruit juice like a peach nectar, you're going to lose, you're basically going to just, for lack of a better term, you're going to boil off or evaporate off those very, very, very light, delicate signature flavors of peach, those top aroma notes that we associate with fresh peach. So when that happens, that is usually when the industry, when we're creating a juice that needs to be pasteurized, for example, that's when we'll reach for something like a natural peach flavor. And hopefully we can find one that is natural. And we add back just enough of that top note to bring the product back to its fresh flavor. And in doing so, allow many more people access to the product, to the juice, and allow many more people to consume it at a much more cost-effective level.
We invited a leading manufacturer of artificial flavors to participate in this discussion, but it declined. Why is the industry so secretive if it's all as nice as the two of you describe it to be?
Barb, do you want me to answer? Do you want to go ahead with
that? Well, I think the food industry sees the flavors that they use in their foods as somewhat of their intellectual property.
So can they patent them?
No. No, they really can't. If you patent something, you divulge it's what it is. And then competitors can say, well, I'll make something like that. And so that really gets to be a difficult road. Most formulations are trade secrets. as opposed to any patenting.
So is the flavor that McDonald's might add to French fries or what Skittles flavors its candies with used only by those brands?
Maybe, perhaps. I would guess for most of the large companies out there that the flavors they use in their foods are made custom for them, for that specific food application. There are flavors that you can buy that are just stock ingredients that a flavor company might have on their shelf. They might have a vanilla extract from Madagascar, and they might have one from Indonesia that they would sell to many, many different food companies, but there might be a specific vanilla that they have developed specifically for a company that is their signature vanilla flavor. And so both things happen. You do have the signature custom flavors developed, and then you have those that are used across the industry.
We're going to take a little break. Our phone number here is 212-433-9692. That's 212-433-WNYC.org. You can also reach us on our show page at WNYC.org through Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. I'm talking with Barb Stuckey, who is a professional food developer at Mattson and author of Taste: Surprising Stories and Science About Why Food Tastes Good. It's available now in paperback from Atria. And Dr. Gary Rynexis, who is a professor and head of the Flavor Research and Education Center at the Department of Food Science and Nutrition at the University of Minnesota. And we are back with today's Please Explain look at natural and artificial flavors with Dr. Gary Rynexis, who is a professor and head of the Flavor Research and Education Center in the Department of Food Science and Nutrition at the University of Minnesota, Barb Stuckey, who is a professional food developer at Mattson and author of Taste: Surprising Stories and Science About Why Food Tastes Good. It's available now in paperback from Atria. And we're inviting your calls at 212-433-9692. You can write us on our show page at WNYC.org, also on Facebook and at Twitter. And let's go to our first caller, who is Bert. Hi, Bert.
How are you?
I'm well. Bert from Easton, Connecticut.
Connecticut, yes. I'm honored to be on the show today with you, Leonard, and Barbara, and Dr. Rynexis. And I had a question I'd like to offer for comment. I'm not certain if I'm divulging any secrets of the industry, but the discussion talked about reaching out for something artificial when the natural isn't available, and I have raspberry bushes where I live, but sometimes the birds get to them. And I was driving in the rural area where I live the other day, and I pointed out to my wife that there is a solution if we lose our raspberries again. And I pointed at something. I'll let the doctor and perhaps Barbara discuss it. But I said we would call it roadkill raspberry. Without divulging a secret of the flavoring industry, I'm talking about raspberry. Would anybody like to comment upon what I may be using in lieu of my real raspberries?
Well, the first thing that would come to mind is orris root, but that, I don't know if I'd call that roadkill. So you're going to have to go to Barb.
I'm at a loss on this one. I'm not really sure where the caller is going with this.
But there are artificial raspberry flavorings, aren't there?
Oh, yes. Sure.
And again, they would be derived by taking apart the chemistry of the raspberry and finding other chemicals that would duplicate that?
Sure. That's exactly the approach for artificial. And for this, there would be chemicals called ionones that tend to carry the flavor of raspberry. So they would be looking for sources, natural sources. And orris root is the most common for that. Or then, yeah, the synthesis of these types of compounds.
Now, how conscious do the chemists have to be of the basics of how humans taste?
Well, I think nature's probably taken care of that for us in the sense that the food does have all the chemicals, the aroma compounds, primarily, as Barb said, primarily aroma compounds that give you the flavor. So by studying the natural product, you become aware of what is key. And there's some selection too, of course, because a flavor may, you know, food, fruit flavor, strawberry may have 400, 500 aroma chemicals, and you really don't need all of them. So there is some selection that, that has to go into that process to end up with maybe 20.
I've been informed that the caller was being kind of coy, and he was wondering if raspberry flavor is derived from skunk anal glands. That's what he had heard.
No. Not yet.
But could it have been? Would we be going to places like that if we understood? For example, birth control actually was first synthesized, the chemistry of birth control, from Mexican yams. So there are these odd relationships in nature. Couldn't something like that be the case? Well, okay, neither of you want to know the answer.
I can't speak to that. I actually don't know the answer to that, where some of the flavors are derived. I know that the flavor companies that make them will view those things as their intellectual property, as to where they find something that smells like raspberry, where they find something that smells like strawberry. So that I'm sure is someone's trade secret, and I'm sure there are many different compounds or originating ingredients that they find it from. But back to your question, Leonard, on what you said, you know, do we really have to understand how taste works in order to use these flavors? And I think the answer is absolutely yes. And our experience of food is so incredibly complex. It's not just the interaction between the food and our taste buds, as many people think, but there's so much else going on. There is texture that influences our experience. And then, of course, there's aroma, which we're talking about today. But a really delicious food is the right balance, the perfect combination of the texture of the basic taste, and by those I mean the sweet, the sour, the bitter, the salt, and the umami characteristics of the food, and the aromas. And so balancing those three things is really what my job, what any chef or food technologist that's developing food, that's what our job is to get those things right. And hopefully you're getting them from real food ingredients. So you're starting with strawberries, whether it be strawberry puree or frozen strawberries or fresh strawberries, however you might get there, but that you're resorting to the use of flavors only when necessary to add back a little bit of these delicate flavor aromas that are lost in the process of making the food.
But, Gary, it's been my experience that artificial flavorings that mimic sugar or salt or chocolate never really capture the true feeling of sugar, salt, or chocolate, and I could probably go through a list of other foods as well.
Yeah, and that's certainly a problem, that we really can't duplicate what nature's done, oftentimes using other chemicals. And, you know, when we try to duplicate chocolate artificially or even by natural, you know, recombinations, we don't do a good job at it. Nature is extremely complex, and so we can, in some cases, we can do pretty well, but we don't match it exactly. It's a problem.
Let's take some more calls. Ian, hi, you're on the air.
You know, it's funny, actually, you guys just answered the question I was going to ask, if chocolate actually was able to be synthesized well enough to be used in the industry, but I guess you just answered it right now.
Well, do you notice the difference, Ian, when you eat a chocolate that says made with artificial flavoring?
I'm not sure if it's. I can say I can. If I spend a lot more money on my chocolate, it tends to taste better. That's my hypothesis there, but it hasn't been a scientific explanation. No, I can't say for sure.
Well, yeah. Often artificial chocolate. Artificially flavored chocolate goes into something else, like an inexpensive ice cream, doesn't it?
Yes, and so I think that's the question is, in what application are we talking about? Because we can do pretty well at duplicating the aroma of chocolate, so which is what we're talking about here, these things that we use called flavors, and we can get really really close with the aroma of chocolate, but that lovely melting characteristic of real chocolate, when you put it in your mouth and it starts to melt at human body temperature, that mouthfeel, that experience of chocolate is something that comes from chocolate and chocolate alone. And so if you're trying to recreate that food, that chocolate, it's a much more complex system than just the aroma of chocolate. And a chocolate flavor that gives you a perfect chocolate aroma is not going to do it, because your experience of chocolate is so much more complex. It's than just the aroma. It's the texture. It's the level of sweetness in combination with the level of bitterness that you're getting from the cocoa beans. It's very, very complex. So, you can generally tell when you're eating really good natural chocolate.
Let's take another call. Arthur from Brooklyn, hi, you're on the air.
Hi. It seems to be that everyone is terrified of sugar these days, including our mayor, Bloomberg. So I suppose it was just a matter of time before the big food companies took notice of this. And sure enough, there's a very popular brand, I won't mention the brand, of orange juice on the market that has reduced the sugar, the natural sugar, by 50%, but they've replaced it with stevia. S-T-E-V-I-A, stevia extract. Now, my question is, I and many other people drink tons of orange juice, and I'm sure they're buying a lot of this new stevia product. How safe is it to ingest tons of stevia?
Gary, you said that artificial flavorings are often safer. Is that the case with stevia?
Well, stevia comes...
Or stevia, that's what
natural,
I thought it was.
Yeah, it's a natural product, and so it is an extract of an existing plant. So it is a natural sweetener in that sense. It's not traditionally natural. We don't think of it as sucrose or some of the other sweet products.
But if there's a product on the market like this one that the caller's referring to from a large company, and it contains something like stevia, you can assume that that product has been vetted by the FDA as safe for human consumption. And so there's this term that we use in the industry called GRAS, which is G-R-A-S, and it stands for Generally Recognized as Safe. And stevia has been approved as GRAS, or generally recognized as safe, and so we can assume that there has been testing done that says that it is safe to eat these ingredients, or that this drink this product in quantities that normal humans would drink. Now, you know, of course, people can abuse things, but generally, I think you can assume that an ingredient like that is going to be safe.
Smoky flavoring is found in barbecue sauce, other grilled items. Can you tell us how that flavor is made? Do they actually create smoke?
Well, traditionally it was done in that manner. Where, yes, you would basically use the different woods, heat them to a point where they start to combust or give off smoke, condense the smoke, and that's what would be used. Over time, they've been treated, cleaned up a little bit to get rid of compounds that aren't necessarily desirable in there from a toxicology standpoint or safety standpoint. So they've been cleaned up a good deal. And, of course, there are artificial versions of them as well. But, yeah, traditionally it came from the same process.
Now, both of you have been reassuring, but I can tell you we've been getting a lot of questions from listeners about the safety of artificial flavors. Some have raised questions about whether they lead to obesity as well. Is there a real problem? Why do you think people are so suspicious?
Well, I think that obesity is enormously complex, excuse the pun. But the reasons that obesity is a problem are complex, and I think trying to blame it on flavors is somewhat fraught. Keep in mind, we started the discussion with the explanation of a flavor, which is that it is an aroma. So in many cases, the flavors that are added to food are actually not adding any fat, any calories, any salt, or any sugar. And so what they're doing is they're just enhancing the aromas of food. And I'll go back to that original example I used, which is the vanilla extract that you use when you make a batch of chocolate chip cookies. You can make a batch of cookies, and they'll be fine without vanilla extract. But when you make one with vanilla extract, they're just that much better. It's more complex and rounded.
And we have to leave it there, unfortunately. Thank you so much, Barb. Barb Stuckey is author of Taste, Surprising Stories in Science about Why Food Tastes Good. It's from Atria. Dr. Gary Rynexis is professor and head of the Flavor Research and Education Center in the Department of Food Sciences and Nutrition at the University of Minnesota. Thank you both for being on today's Please Explain.